All right, we have a world to do today and fascinating material. The year is ticking away. We have this week, we have next week, the week afterwards. There's only a shiur on Monday. That's the final shiur. The week afterwards is Shavuot.
So then we don't have really...
This week is normal, next week is normal. The third week is only Monday, and the week after that is Shavuot, and 2 weeks later I'll be in the States. I have enough. You have no idea. As I predicted, the new book is like, it's a midrash. You have no idea what's... I raise my hands, but ain't malasat. That's life. All right, what's the difference? Today is normal, tomorrow is normal, next week is normal. Jack, don't look at a calendar. We'll worry further as time marches.
I like to plan ahead. I like to know what's coming.
No, Peseda.
So the last...
What?
We'll only touch on
Luxstein. We won't reach Luxstein this year. We'll touch Goldstein, maybe a drop of Luxstein. Next year, why are you fighting with God? If we have more to do, he has to keep us alive. You have no idea what I've prepared, what I've uncovered. I have an Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin. It's revolutionary, but I just need... Give me another 120 years to teach, okay? No, that's going to be after the Litvashi Yeshiva. The world doesn't realize that the Litvashi Yeshiva and YU influenced Rebbe. You don't know who Rebbe Meir Shapira was. You understand? This man, what he built in Lublin. And then, look what happened. It's beyond words. If anyone is not a Zionist, their eyes are blind. I'll put it that way. Okay? Okay, let's roll. Let's get started. Jits, let the Ribbono Shel Olam give us long, healthy, fruitful life. And believe me, that's the only prayer in my mind. Everything else is unimportant. Rafi's worried about money. At your age, you worry money. At my age, forget it.
Herman Wook wrote a book at age 97.
We'll dedicate the shiur today in his memory. Okay, today is Sunday, May 19th, 2019. And it's been a big week for us in Israel and a difficult Shabbos with the Eurovision. I guess in America they have no idea what we're complaining about, but the Chilul Shabbos. In the 1970s, no one complained about Chilul Shabbos. We were few and far between. Today it's a different story, and the Shalva band, a choir, what a Kiddush Hashem these kids made, that they refused to participate.
They might have won.
And it's a terrific Kiddush Hashem. I cry when I... Look at these kids. All right. You have to go further and be makarev all the Jews to Torah. Now, I want to say hello to my wonderful students in front of me, to those across the world. You should know that this room is a pig pen. I don't know, there's Shabbat there. Don't ask what, the baby thing. This room was set up by Yomo this morning. The chairs, the tables, all Yomo. Now, before I begin, I just want to make some corrections. I kept on saying that Reb Shimon Shtub's granddaughter was Shulamit Eilon, the Communist Party. So I've corrected myself. But I want to be sure you understand me carefully. The mistake, by the way, is not mine. I picked the mistake up in an Israeli newspaper many decades ago that said Shulamit Eilon gets all this mail. People think she's Reb Shimon Shtub's granddaughter. And it turns out it was not Shulamit Eilon. It was Shulamit Eilon. And Shulamit Eilon is a granddaughter of another rabbi, but not Reb Shimon Shtub. The granddaughter of Shimon Shtub was Fegi Ilanit. And she was the daughter of Reb Feivel Hindus. Reb Feivel Hindus was the son-in-law of Reb Shimon Shtub. I can talk about him endlessly. God spare me when we talk about the European Yeshiva, but I'll get to him. But he died, or the mother died, be it as it was, she, at a young age, went to Reb Shimon's home, was raised by her grandparents. She joined Shomer HaTzair, that was the era, and came in Aliyah in the 30s, was a big leftist here, not a communist, but Mapam, She fought for Stalin, Stalin's picture. You know what went on here in the 50, 60, 70 years ago, I should say, 60 years ago. Even when we came in Aliyah 50 years ago, May 1st, they paraded and what went on. Today you don't even know it's May 1st.
The big building across the street by Rachel Strauss with red flags.
Red flags, correct. Okay, now Fagi joined Kibbutz Gan Shmuel, which was named after Reb Shmuel Mullava, what was a Mapam Kibbutz, and she had a son. This
Shmuel
is Mullava. The great Reb Shmuel Mullava, one of the...
No.
He, Reb Shmuel Mullava, was a Rav, and where was he, Rav? It could be in Bialystok, has to be checked out. If you go online, check it out. And he was an... He was an Adam Gadol, Reb Shmuel Mullava, and interestingly enough, a Shomatzir Kibbutz was named in his memory. Very interesting.
Yeah.
They brought the body here years. You can get it all. It's all history today. But here's what I want to tell you. Her son. In other words, the great grandson of Reb Shimon Shkup was Uri Ilan. The name already, Ilanit became Ilan. He made the name masculine, Uri Ilan. And Uri Ilan, lo aleinu, this is the famous story. In the early 50s, he and others in a very, in 54, four soldiers in his unit along with him, and they were captured in Damascus, captured in Kenetra, brought to Damascus, tortured, and each one was kept separately, and he was told that all his friends were executed already, and the only way he could save his life is by giving them information. And he hanged himself in the cell, and he left the note. See, this was very famous. I knew about this. I wasn't here yet. He left the note, Hit abadati, I committed suicide, lo bagadati, hit abadati, I didn't reveal any information. And it turned out that the other four were alive, and later on Israel traded, gave back many Syrian prisoners, and they got back the other four with the notes that the great-grandson of Reb Shimon Shkup left. So I just want to make that clear. Steve Richter corrected me, others corrected me, and I stand corrected. Okay, something else as well, which I don't know whether right, wrong, but Gedalia Friedenberg, I mentioned that Reb Moshe read the New York Times every day. So I heard that from Reb Moshe David Tendler, so I think. So here there's an article that Rav Moshe Feinstein read newspapers. It seems in the obscure world they claim that Rav Moshe never wasted a minute and he never read newspapers. And here there's a picture of Rav Moshe reading a Yiddish newspaper. And according to the article, quoting Rabbi Tendler, he read a Yiddish newspaper every day. And one time Rav Moshe David Tendler asked him, why do you... are you so makpid to read the newspaper every day? And he answered, it's my window to the world. That's the way I know what's going on. So if I'm wrong about the New York Times, I stand corrected. But that's what I heard many years ago. But all right, he read the Morgan Journal, he read the Tag, some Zayn Kusant. Another... not correction, people misunderstood me. I don't know if it was in the Sunday class or the Monday class. I mentioned that when they opened Highlight, they came to the Rav to ask whether or not it should be co-ed or they must have it separate. So someone sent me an article, which I'm aware of, that the Highlight, the day school, was opened in the late 30s. That's absolutely so. What I was talking about was the high school. That in the 50s, Highlight decided it's time to open a high school. Okay, so I just want to... The day school at that time was co-ed, yes. That day school doesn't exist anymore. Hafter, it became... what was it called? Hafter became... It merged with Highlight.
Right.
And it became half the Hebrew, what half the stand for, five towns. And Rockaway. Okay, and today I'm sure it's separate. I can't believe that it's half the mixed, or certainly Limud HaKodesh, it must be separate. I can't imagine you can run a school in that area.
The high school was
mixed.
I don't know about
today in the year 2020, I have my doubts. Okay, maybe I'm right, maybe wrong. We can find out easily enough in a few weeks' time. I'll be there. Now, I want to pick up where I left off. And yeah, Reb Moshe Sternbuch, very fascinating individual. He is a man who's a gon, fabulous memory. His native language is English. He's lived in the Western world for many, many decades, including England, Switzerland, South Africa, rabbi, and nevertheless, he's totally identified with the Eder Haredit. And as you know, even with Satmar, he stood with the Satmar of recently maledicting Israel over the whole draft issue. So he's a very interesting individual. He has big yichus, the Sternberg family itself, and they tie in with the Soloveitchik family. If you read or heard that Reb Meshulam David Soloveitchik is not well and should have refuah shleima, he is a surviving son, I don't know if there's anyone else surviving, of the Briska Rav. Reb Meshulam David, very famous name in the Soloveitchik world, Rosh Kolel, and Reb Meshulam David is married to Moshe Sternbach's sister. You follow? There's a tie-in right here with the Soloveitchik world. Okay, so we're looking, by the way, I want to mention that Hermann Wuch died at the age of 103, a few days short of 104, and we should dedicate the shiur to his memory. He was an unbelievable individual. In my time, he gave a workshop at Yeshiva College for advanced students in how to write. And it was when he came to Yeshiva, it like was a holiday in the Yeshiva. Everyone, it was like an Adam Gadol coming. People wanted to just catch a look at him, a snippet of him. And my best story with Hermann Wuch is, of course, he's a bit older than I am, but he grew up in the Bronx. And his grandfather, his mother's father, was a rav in the Bronx. And he was a typical kid. He was, you know, dedicated to his parents and his grandparents. And later in life, he threw away, like every kid did at that time. Suddenly, they got too wise and too big for religion. And then he came back, b'lei v'nefesh. And he always says the seeds were planted by his grandfather. The best story with his grandfather, and you have to understand the Bronx, every day between Mincha Marav, the grandfather taught. So who was there? Everyone was working. Who was there? So you had the old-timers, the retirees, the Europeisha mention, everything was in Yiddish, and the grandfather is teaching after Rosh Hashanah Hilchot Tshuva, before Yom Kippur. And he's telling them, and you know the Rambam Hilchot Tshuva, that you can do tshuva and erase your entire past. And one of the Balabatim asked him, your entire past? Absolutely, and he's encouraging them. So the kid goes home with his grandfather, and evidently he's having supper at his grandparents' house. I understand the relationship. It's like a relationship I had as the grandchildren were growing up who lived near us. And the grandson says, Zayda, das is emes? He says, is it true that a machalos Shabbos and oichlin avelis and treifis, all his life he sins, and he's equal to a Jew who never sinned in his life? At the age of 70, he became frum when he retired. Big deal. But this Jew, 70 years, wasn't machalos Shabbos. Zayda, what did you tell them? So Zayda said to him, listen, I want to be makar of them to do tshuva. So I'm telling them they can erase everything they did, but I'll explain to you what the real answer is. If you're a Shemesh Shabbos all your life, you have 80 golden pages written, right? That's your life, 80 golden pages. These people who may listen to me and become frum when they're 70, So in 10 years' time, they'll have 70 blank pages erased, but nothing there. And the last 10 pages will be golden. And that story Hermann Wouk tells in This Is My God. This Is My God was a fabulous volume at its time. It had a tremendous impact. I remember using it teaching high school kids in Talmud Torah. There was a workbook prepared for it. And even today, it's worth reading This Is My God. I admit it's dated, it's the 50s. It's not the problems we have today, but it's a tremendous book. And he went on, Kanain Hara, Arichet Yamim Tovim, his wife, his children, really a tremendous credit to Am Yisrael. Yes, yes, Moshe.
The Gemara says, Tshuva me'ahava bonus becomes a chuyos.
There's a lot to talk on what that Gemara means, and the Rav has spoken about it, and what does it mean? Chuyos, oh, we'll leave it. If you want to differ and say they all have golden pages, I'll accept it. But I think that to say this answer was better than that. Do me a favor. Tell your aunt that I spoke about Zach Baumol. You remember the shir I gave the next to last day before Pesach on Sunday? It's online. Okay. Tell your aunt about it. It's important because she told
Sarah.
Me. Sarah, yeah, because she said something to my wife and I wanted to know. I spoke about it and she should listen, okay? Yashik Kohach. Okay. Now let's pick up where we left off. So because of his wide experience, he's gotten these questions that no other Gadol B'Torah had in modern times. Could you imagine you're marrying a woman who's not from? You become from. Tarat Mishpacha, can you depend upon her? Can't you depend upon her? The father and mother, Balei Tshuva, do you do another wedding? This is a very, very edel question. It's not a simple question. Because if they didn't have children, it's one thing. But you're talking about their children. What are you going to do? Make a marriage ceremony as if to say to the kids, you're illegitimate. And I have to tell you something. Linguistically, Rafi, and this is very important, there's no translation for mamsa. People translated illegitimate child. It's not so. But kids who speak English, if they see their parents doing another marriage ceremony, what does this kid think? He's illegitimate. All right? So, very interesting. He throws out the story of the idea of the Rav. I love that what he throws out. But you see, this is very indicative, and we're going to come to it later today, Rav Moshe Sternbach. And I spoke with the great Talmud Chacham, who's related to Rav Moshe Sternbach. And without my saying a word, he made the point that I felt. Sometimes he threw out tremendous havrakot, a fabulous idea, but he doesn't back it up. Give us sources. How are you going to work it out? I'm being Masada Kedushin, and the other couple is standing there, and I have to have kavana for the people in front of me, for the couple on the side. How do you work all this out? But it's very interesting, very innovative thinking. All right, he doesn't reach a total conclusion there. Now, what's very fascinating is the Shaila, and there already we spoke about Rabbi Avishai David, we spoke about Rabbi Doron Peretz. You become from, a Moroccan kid becomes from in South Africa. He's total Ashkenazi. Avishai David, if I wouldn't tell you that he's a Greek, no one in the world would know that. Jack would know it because he spoke with him privately. But you can't tell. He's Eretta Geschmack in Yiddish. Et Kochavit Zich in Yiddish, Vichab Zich Kochavit. He had to break his teeth to learn Yiddish just the way I did. How can you tell? Doron Peretz ran an Ashkenazi shul outside of the name Peretz. In a million years, he should have called himself Przensky, not Peretz. You follow? So I asked him. He told me. So I have to say that Reb Moshe Steinbuch agrees. You follow the people who made you from. Now, I want to mention someone, Moshe Rosenblatt, a sub-student, sent me an article of Rav Heshel Schechter It appeared in Beit Yitzchak Lamed Tet. And he deals with this very question of whose nusach do you follow? He deals with Balei Tshuva, husband, wife. It's interesting. You can look it up. It's probably downstairs in the library. This is the article. I went through it. I don't know if, again, I'm not completely at ease with Reb Heschel's analogy. He makes an analogy at a certain point to the whole sugi of Makom Shenahagu. And again, I don't want to spend the rest of the shir on it, because Moshe, you have to know, I want to keep to the topic, but Makom Shenahagu, lo amaretz anochi. But what does Makom Shenahagu mean? Makom Shenahagu, you come from a place where they close down at 1 o'clock on Friday, right? And someone else, you go to a city where they're open until like half hour before lich benching, all right? So, yes, this is Makom Shenahagu, but it's not part of your DNA. When we talk about Nusach Sfad, Nusach Ashkenaz, eating rice on Pesach, Gebrachs on Pesach, to me it's not Makom Shenahagu. To me already it's part of your DNA. It's your whole religious gestalt. There's nothing to do already where you live. My wife has Hasidic roots, I told you. No, I suffer. I was a kid. What did I know about the Hasidic world? I grew up entirely Litvish. Everyone had Knedlach Seder night. So I once put matzah into the soup. My mother looked at me like I'm a goy. And believe me, I can learn better as much as I have deep respect for my mother-in-law and raising kids and remaining from born in America 110 years ago, more than 110 years ago. But Ribbono Shel Olam, I can learn better than my mother-in-law. What's wrong with putting matzah in soup? But you see, it's part of your DNA. It's a lot more than Makom Shenahagu. Anyway, halacha l'maisa, I think we have to paskin that. Kol ha'melamed ben chavero Torah kilu yilado, and ein achinami. If you become a Baal Tshuva, you have to follow the people who made you from. I don't know if I want to go as far as Rav Ovadia Yosef and his sons of Paskin Lahalacha. When you come in Aliyah, you can change yourself into a Sfadi, because this is Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael, the Beit Yosef was the Maran Beit Yosef. Everything was Alpiv. I don't know to go that far, but there's no question if I wouldn't be from and I was made from by Rav Ovadia Yosef, I become a total Sfadi. And I can tell you something, you see this with Chabad. Chabad have an expression, it's a Yiddish expression, I'll say it in English, that you know you've succeeded when you transformed the people into your image. Now what are they talking about? Chabad went to Asiatic Russia, Georgia, take all these cities there. Chabad went there. No, when you go to Kiryat Malachi, let's say, you meet Jews with long beards davening Nusach Ari. In a million years, you wouldn't know that they're Me'edot HaMizrach. They're total Chabadnikim. There's no difference whatsoever. We met in Russia. You met some of the Chabadnikim in Russia. Sarah Fradkin, for instance, was of Georgian origins. Go and dream. These cities, Chabad succeeded so that the guests became like the Rabbanim who came in. And this is what I told you, if you recall the story. It's a cute story. And it also, it's a reference to our generation. Yitzchak knows the name. We all revere this person, Eliyahu Esas. Eliyahu Esas led the whole Baal Tshuva movement, non-Chabad. He was from Vilna, his name was Eliyahu, and totally anti-Hasidus, Ad Kedei Kach, when he finally got out of Israel, I was together with him in a few events, and they started singing Mashiach. He wouldn't sing it. This song is tainted, it's like Chabad. So then, you know, the Ribbono Shel Olam feared the Welt. So one daughter became a Gerer Chasida, all right? And his son brings home, it's the Gerer Chasida. The son later marries a girl made from by Lubavitch, but we'll talk about the Gerech Hasida. So you have to ask a question. How does a Bala Tshuva, a second generation Bala Tshuva from Moscow, how does she marry a Gerech Hasida? No, it's a good question. You all know the Haredi world. I'm not complimenting the Haredi world. Chaim Goldberg gave up his membership in the Haredi world because of incidents like this. They know, I'm being serious. They look down, you're a Bala Tshuva, you're second rate, you're second this, second that. How does it come? So I meet her in-laws. And here's this Jew, short guy, skinny, long, gera beard, payas, the gera, dressed like a gera, retak a schmuck in Yiddish. You should hear that Yiddish. And then I find out he's an Egyptian. He had to run out in 56. He was a teenager to save his life. He got to Stamford Hill. Anyone know London? When I mention Stamford Hill, what I'm talking about? That's the Hasidic Center. Knew who took him in. They found an apartment for him. Friends. The whole building was filled with Gerech Chassidim. He became one of the family. By the time of 21, his first language was Arabic. His second language was Hebrew. His third language was English. And his fourth language was Yiddish. And later on, his son, and you should have seen a Gerech Chassid, Ribbono Shel Olam, 100%. When he walked into the room, I'll never forget this as long as I live, he was shaking. I asked, was Shakeltzich? Why is he shaking? He was never in a room with women before, at the engagement party. First time he's in a room with women. You have to understand Gerech Chassidus. I'm not here to compliment them or to tell you this is the way to live, but this is the reality. But you see that Einochinami, Halacha Lamaiso, whenever I get the Shaila, if this is the way you became Prum, if this is where you feel at home, believe me, what does the Zohar say? The Ari HaKodesh. There are 12 different ways to get to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And each way is legitimate. Okay, fine. Let me go further. Moshe, did you want to ask anything? I'm ready to roll.
I had something, but I
forgot what it was. Okay, come back to you.
I remember it.
Okay. Then we went into a different question about davening, where you don't know Hebrew. And there, it's a very interesting tshuva, because he knows English. And he was opposed to the word, blessed art thou our Lord, God Almighty, which is better, which is correct, which is really God, what should you say? And he comes up with the proposal that they should say, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, read it in transliteration. And you all know these are all the Siddurim. You'll always find in the American Siddurim on the last page, the transliteration of the Kaddish. With Kaddish, regular Kaddish, Mourner's Kaddish, and Kaddish of the Rabbis. And the Nebuch, these are people who don't know Hebrew. But what can I tell you? My father never missed the minyan from the time I was, brought him to a total understanding of Yiddishkeit. And I think until the day he died, he still davened in English. I know his Birnbaum Siddur was mocked up, and Ribbono Shel Olam, Kalakavot. But listen, that was the generation where how could he know Hebrew? He grew up in Harlem before Yeshiva Salanta was organized. It could be, had he been a few years younger, he might have gone to Salanta. Salanta was organized in Harlem right before 1917, 1918, around then. That's the Salanta that winds up in the Bronx. That's the Salanta which I went to. That's the Salanta which the Shanghai crowd, when they needed Panasa in 1947, 48, all over America, the few day schools that were, whether it was in Baltimore or Boston or the Bronx, we picked up the crowd from Mir, from Shanghai, from Brisk, and I need not tell you, it changed Torah history. Okay. These questions go on and on. What about the question of Tfilat Kalim, what we ended off last week with? And also a fascinating question. People can keep kosher, But whoever heard of Tfilat Kalim, or more than that, your parents knew you're coming and you're makpid, they'll buy only kosher, and they bought a new dish for you, a new silverware, no Tfilat Kalim. And this problem comes up all the time. What is Tfilat Kalim? Is it a din in every kli you cannot use unless it's nitbal? Or is it a din that the owner has to be kaitel? But if you're not the owner, you can use it. And that's what they attribute to the Chazon Ish. As I said, there's no way to prove it. These statements that people quote. In other words, the Chazon Ish says, Vet nishtager, the situation doesn't get worse if you drink from a cup that was a nitbal. But it means, the Chazon Ish is saying, it's a din in the owner. You can use it. The owner is mevatel a mitzvah asay, as if to speak, by not being taifel. All right. These are questions that every Balei Tshuva has. Moshe Rabbi Weinberg, my Talmud, the famous Rebbe today, he dealt with this already in the 1980s in his first book. And he told me that first book was originally over 500 pages, but they cut it down. Chaval, it would be very interesting to see the psukim he gave then. He's top quality. The Eish Kodesh Rebbe, top quality. Kala kavod lo. All right. Now, let me come to a very interesting question. You go to a cemetery. Go to a cemetery that was planned halachically, that people knew what they were doing. You go to Eretz Chaim in Beit Shemesh. For the sake of argument, my first Rebbe in the yeshiva, Rabbi Michal Katz, was my Rebbe, 51, 52, 53. And I became very close to Rabbi Michal and his wife, Hindi, Zichronon Levracha. He was a Kohen. Katz, Kohen Tzedek, he was a Kohen. So you notice he's buried right near the road. The road, they keep the trees away from the road. Look at the cemetery in Beit Shemesh. You can walk from the entrance to where he's buried if you're a Kohen. His family of Kohanim, they're very careful. So you all understand there's a din in Tumat Kohanim. By the way, in Borough Park, bordering on Flatbush, you have a real problem because the cemetery was cut by highways and there are trees that hang over and there's literally streets where Kohanim cannot walk. There's streets where you would take a shortcut and go from Borough Park into Flatbush. You can't do it if you're a Kohen because the trees are hanging over. Go and tell the Blasio the trees should be cut so there shouldn't be too much Kohanim. You understand? I challenge you to explain that to the Blasio. All right. So Mazayin Gesund, he's also running for President of the United States. I know it's starting to like it, Jack. I think I'll throw my hat in too. 50 years in Israel and he's still dreaming of being president. All right. Now, so a Kohen can't be Metame, we know that. On the other hand, tell me, what about if it's your father, your mother, your sister who's not married, your brother? Certain relatives, there's a Chiyav Letame, a Chiyav, plain and simple. Basic respect, Kibud Avayim, it's your father, it's your mother. Right or wrong? All right. Now, why should there be a Shaila? What's the Shaila? Okay, let me show you a Rambam. Hilchot Avel, Perek Aleph, Halachi Yud. Very important Rambam. Obviously, when I quote a Rambam, you can find the sources. Look into the Nosei Kalim, the Midrashim, you'll find the sources. In Mesechet Ketana, Evil Rabati, Kol haposhim midakei tziva, v'chem hanashim sher paku ol hamitzvah me'al tzavaran, v'eino nichloyin b'chlal Yisrael b'asiyat hamitzvah v'kibut hamoadot v'yeshivet batei kinesiyot batei redashot eila harei hein kach b'nei chorim latzmam Kisha ha'umot v'chein ha'minim v'amishumotim v'amosrim kul elu ein mitavlim aleichem. What a Rambam. someone who's not from, and this is a perfect description. You talk about American Judaism. Let's talk about Maplewood, South Orange. Isn't the Maplewood a Rebbe sitting here? All right. My Bekeshir is still on order. They're working on it. Right or wrong. By the way, my talk played big. My only problem is everyone so far is giving me compliments. But with emails, you don't know where they're living. You follow me? If people in Israel are complimenting me, what's the big deal? I would expect them to compliment me. They're living here. I want to see how my talk played in Washington Heights. If anyone there is complimenting me, or they're maledicting me as a chutzpah, all right? I think you understand what I'm saying. So let's talk about Maplewood. We're organizing a shul. Tell me, Pesach, you get a minyan? Absolutely. You have mazel with Pesach because it falls with Easter. So the whole world is filled with Easter news, so they hear about Pesach. Sukkot, you have mazel, it's a few days after Yom Kippur, so you can shout and plead with the people on Yom Kippur, build the sukkah before Yom Kippur, let the balabatim see, you'll get a minyan. Shavuot? Who ever heard of it? New right or wrong? You go and find the minyan in a frum shul, the 1950s, an Orthodox shul, outside of New York City, whoever heard of Shavuot? And this, the description here is unbelievable, that these Jews threw everything away and the holy days, the holidays, to sit and learn in a shul, in a synagogue, in a Beit Medrash, and he goes on, and then you can have Jews who are from Minim, Mishumadim, Maishrin. That, by the way, Naturikata, could perhaps Loa Leinu, some of Satma Fifth, fall into that category. To demonstrate against the state of Israel. Although we'll come back to it. I have something to say, but not now. Later or tomorrow. But coming back here, Ribbono Shel Olam, this kid is a Baal Tshuva. He found out he's a Kohen. Fine. The kid is Nizar and Kala Kachamura. And his father, his mother, total Mishumadim, no contact. His father dies. Can he go to the funeral? Is he allowed a coin? L'tameya tatzmo. By the way, don't catch me on the words, because the truth is, we're all tamei matim today from the day we're born. But I mean, is he allowed l'tameya tatzmo in the sense it's your father's funeral? You have to do, you have to arrange, you have to carry the coffin. All right. And look what the Rambam says. That kol haposh midachet zibor no avela elachehem v'shakrovehem lovshim levanim, white clothes, not black, mitatvim levanim v'ochlim v'shotim, eat and drink usmeichem shavdu sonot shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'aleihem hakatuv omer halo mesaneach Hashem esna. I hate those who hate you. And wow, what a question. This kid turns to him in South Africa and doesn't know what to do. His father died. Father, and you see the description here, Aviv Mechalel Shabbos Bafrechesia, and he's not really part of the Jewish people. And here the Rambam paskins clearly that you're not medabel, you're not metame yourself, you have nothing to do with the funeral, you rejoiced, you're happy. And the kid asked, what do I do? And this is a question, this is life today. All right, Michael, I will agree with you. If I got this question, I would tell the kid right away, your father is a tinok shenishba. I agree with you 100%, and he understands the issue. But it's fascinating. He says, I'm quoting him, Omnam navuch ani. He says, I don't know what to answer. I'm in doubt. I'm perplexed. Navuch, perplexed. The Yishushan navucha. I don't know what to answer. Malif Sotbazer. And he quotes the Rambam. And he says, yes, you might say like Michael Miller that they're Tinokotche Nishbu'u. But he says, are they really Tinokotche Nishbu'u? Who are these people in South Africa? No, Vic, how is South Africa built? All the Lithuanians who ran away to South Africa. When I was growing up in yeshiva, so there was Din Zar, new Reb Shmuel Leib Zar, we've spoken about him many times, okay? So Din Zar, every 2 years, in the 20s, the 30s, saved up money, visited South Africa. His widowed mother was there. Every 2 years he went to see her. The whole family ran away to South Africa. I'm davening in Doron Peretz's shul in Cape Town, in Johannesburg, excuse me, and they tell me that Tsar, it's his nephew, the spitting image of his uncle. There he is, the family. So these people all came there. This kid's father came to South Africa from a Litvak, and he says, do we consider him a Tinok Shenishba? He says, I can understand if you're talking about the people who born here and their parents were not religious. So kids like that who never saw anything, they are Tinokot Shenishba. But this kid's father is a Litvak. In his youth, he saw religion. He saw Torah. He came to South Africa and was ruined. Koshela Hakel Behem. He says, very hard for me. I don't want to be Makil. I don't know what I want to do. And then he throws in, oh boy. See, this is one little sentence. If you don't know the halachic sociological background to this sentence, you're missing 100 years of lectures. What does he throw in? He says, I don't want to be summoned on what people whisper, that today there's no real coin. Who has a chazakah? Now do you start to realize what I'm saying? How many of you know the conservative response to literature around this topic? Rabbi Klein, the famous rabbi, what was his name? Isaac Klein, I believe, who was a Ungarische Talmud Chacham. By the way, I met grandchildren or great-grandchildren of his here, from 100%. And a Kohen to a Gioret, Kohen to a Grusha, knew how much ink has been spilled on this. Rabbi David Hartman, bring me every Kohen, wants to marry Grusha, Gioret, personal happiness before the Halacha. So a Kohen, how do you know you're a Kohen? What's the Chazakah? No, anyone here a Kohen? How can you prove it? Show me. I don't even know. I say I'm a Yisrael. You can challenge me. All right, but the Chazakah is Rov Yisrael. But how do you know? How do you know a Levi? You follow me? Does anyone have a Yichus Brif from Aaron HaKohen? So all right, this is one factor. Then the Ravitz factor, that there's no Tumah Bisman Hazeh, shit, that we're all Tumei Metim, and therefore if you wear Tumah to Tumah, it doesn't really count as an addition. No, he says, I don't want to be Samach on that. The whole conservative movement, those that knew how to learn, I don't know if David Hartman even got involved in the halachic level. With him it was personal happiness versus halacha, and it breaks my heart to talk like this, because David Hartman was one of the, when I was a kid growing up, there were two great influences on me, Rabban Lichtenstein and Dovi Hartman. You got to know who Dovi was. Read Washington and see my description of Dovi Hartman. I live it. I live it every minute when the Chazon Ish died. But all right, you have to be humble, and you always, Rakefet always lives with one principle. I will always ask myself, if I'm going to say this or say that or paskin this way or that way, will it embarrass my Rebbe? I never want to embarrass the Rav, period. That keeps me in place. So, but this is Rav Moshe Sternbuch thinking. And he says, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to tell the kid. And I don't want to be samech on. He knew the conservative literature inside out. He knew what was going on. He was no dope. He was part of the world. Give me a second. Give me a second, Moshe. So, la halacha, he told the kid, look, I can't be lenient. But the truth is, your father doesn't need you. There's a chevra kaddisha today. You see, this is also part of it. The whole question of aninut. Lo aleinu, Vic, you lose a parent. You lose a parent. No, you're not allowed to eat meat and wine. You know how many people don't know this? They get on an LL plane accompanying the body, and they automatically serve them meat. They don't save wine anymore to the, at least the, you know, the masses. What's it called? Tourist class. Tourist. Am I right? That's what it's called. Tourist.
Wine.
I remember in the... No, I don't recall. So they don't save wine. So like they save wine, they serve meat. You know how many people have gotten on the plane accompanying their father's body, their mother's body, and they're not allowed to, and they don't realize they can't eat meat, they can't drink wine. Lo aleinu. I remember when my wife flew back. All right, save it. God, the Rebbeinu Shlomo should be with us. You have to remind people. I know a big Talmud Chacham, a Talmud of mine, got on the plane and served it. Dawned upon him afterwards. He wasn't allowed to have the meat. So, all right, you're an Onen. Tell me, why are you an Onen? No, this, the Rav spoke about so many times. There's a whole machlokes. Tosfos, the Yerushalmi, what is aninut? Is aninut mean you can't concentrate on helping arrange the funeral if you're going to be eating meat and wine? And or no, is aninut a state of mind? Nothing to do with arranging the funeral, nothing to do, they need me, they don't need me. It's I'm overwhelmed with the loss. How can I daven? How can I make a bracha? How can I eat meat, wine, which shows joy in life? It's way beyond food for life, necessary food. What's aninut about? No, if the chevra kaddisha handles it all, you know, it could be you're not a no-nein. Zahom machlokes achronim, right or wrong? How do you view aninut? So he's saying to this kid, look, the chevra kaddisha is arranging the funeral. You don't have to go near the urn. You don't have to go near the body. You go to the funeral, but only go where Kohanim are allowed to walk. Stay behind. Stay in the path. Evidently, in South Africa, they don't have trees overhanging, or at least they know with Kohanim to warn them to be careful. And this is what he paskins for the kid. Do it this way. Keep your distance. Keep your kedushat kohen, if I can use that word. Don't be metame, but keep it avien. I understand you. You want to be at the funeral. Very interesting tshuva. Moshe, what did you want to ask?
It's more than just the conservative literature. There are some major achronim with things that Kohanim are suffering.
If I said Rabbi Klein was a Talmud Chacham, I knew what I was saying. Isaac Klein was a Talmud Chacham. You go through his...
Like also regular posting
for these folks. No, say that. I understand. Yesh amilis moch. But I'll tell you. If we would start being makil, you would eradicate all of Kahuna Bismarck.
Yeah, that's that. Nice that we
would eradicate all of Kahuna Bismarck. This is why the Rav, you should know. I write about this in the Rav. And I heard this from him many times. There's a whole question whether there's chinuch by kahuna. A whole question. So also, the achronim enjoy dealing with the question. There's chinuch by a kid. You have to teach it to a kohen. The Rav always encouraged kohanim to duchen, little kohanim too. He said it's very important. Otherwise, they will totally forget that they are kohanim. Similarly, there's a whole question, what about a Machal Shabbos? God, Kohen comes into shul. I had this in Maplewood, South Orange, Machal Shabbos. Whole question, does that passel him from duchening? Now, it could be it doesn't. It could be it's only an Issa Kahuna that passels him from duchening. If he's living with the Giyorit, living with the Gerusha. Or no, it could be a Machal Shabbos. How can he give a Birchat Kahanim? He's a Machal Shabbos, etc., etc. The Rav always encouraged them to Duchen, because otherwise it will be totally forgotten. And that's the rough, famous story that he told time and again, and a guy named Rakefit wrote it up in the second volume. The Rav, beautiful story, the Rav tells, I hear his voice. He says, the first time from Sadek Kedushin in America. He said, Greenhorn to America, 1932-33, his first wedding. And he asked the kid, the Chatan, are you a Kohen, a Levi, or Yisrael? He said, it might as well have asked the kid if he comes from Mars. The poor kid didn't know what the Rav was talking about. And Ad Kedei Kach, Kohuna was totally stamped out. Who, which American kid cared growing up, knew? So you have to encourage. And all right, this is the answer he gave. In modern times, you're basically able to get away with it because you can arrange that you don't come inside, the sun's standing outside as a Kohen, people aren't lamdanim. Steve Riskin, Rabbi Riskin, in Lincoln Square, would eulogize the person from outside. They had a whole arrangement at Riverside Chapel, which was the local funeral chapel, a few blocks from his shul, big funeral chapel. They arranged, he stood outside, they gave him a microphone, he eulogized from outside, he couldn't go inside the building. Modern times you can do it. So this is an answer, b'diavad, to be yotzei l'fi kol ha-deyot, that you're not matami yourself. On the other hand, you give kibbut aviyim.
It's not a question about his, he could attend the funeral.
Yeah, well, yeah, but no l'tamei, he doesn't want him to go near.
That means, though, is the Rambam telling us that if a man is a Machal Shabbos or on the Shabbos, he can't go to his funeral?
The Rambam is telling us that even with stronger words, to rejoice, to dress in white. But where do you find the Machal Shabbos as a son of Yisrael? There has to be the element of rebellion.
The cousin of the Cardinal Paris, Worcester,
right.
Worcester Jean, that Worcester was his cousin.
Right.
He went to the funeral.
Yeah, well, the Lustiger, how do you call himself?
It was Worcester J.
Worcester J in French.
But
I believe the funeral was in a church, so how do you go lachatchila to a church? He was a cardinal, was in a church. Very, I would paskin to stand outside. But it's a sad story. Here's a cardinal who was Jewish, all his relatives, a Shomer Torah mitzvah, he asked that Kaddish be recited at his funeral. Mm-hmm. And when he came to yeshiva, I think Rabbi Chalap asked him if he put on tefillin that morning. Chalap gave him a bit of a dig there. If
you know that Michael Wishigrad wrote him a letter, right. He has among his writings, that he told the cardinal that even though you're a cardinal, you're still chayim in the mitzvah of tefillin.
Very nice. Did he get an answer?
No.
So there's your answer. All right. Now we have arrived. We've taken this interesting detour, and we have arrived. And I have to tell you in advance, this is one of the most famous psakim that Rabbi Sternbach ever gave. The reason I have my watch, because the clock is not working. All right, Siman Shin Nun Chet. And here it is, a Baal Tshuva. And this is natural for Baal Tshuva. You come back to Yiddishkeit and you recognize that this is Judaism. I tell people all along, all the time, you've heard me say it, there's no such thing as Reform, Conservative, Orthodox. There's only a Jew. And the definition of a Jew is Naseh v'Nishma, with all that goes with it. Some do more, some do less. But there's no concept that we have choice. Naseh v'Nishma. We have plenty of choice on a hashkafic level. As you know, every daf of Gemara has machloket. Halacha, you want to turn it off? Good. Halacha, they answer, try to reach a conclusion. But Hashkafa is left open, freedom of choice, individualistic, fine. So you have a Baal Tshuva, and of course nothing bothers them more than their own mother and father. a Mechalalei Shabbos, not from. And you can understand this. It's natural. I'm rereading now a book I read 20 years ago by Roy Neuberger, From Central Park to Sinai. Fabulous volume. But you see how much it troubles him that his brother's not from, his sister's not from, and but his parents, and he came from Big Yichus. Roy S. Neuberger, the S stands for Salant, his family's mother Salant. She's a great, great, great granddaughter of Rabbi Yisrael Salanta. Next time I meet Roy, I have to tell him that he's related to the Soloveitchik family. The Rebbetzin was a great, great granddaughter of Rebbetzin Tanya. Rabbi Chaim Moise's wife was a great, great granddaughter. But the troubles about tshuva, all right, I understand it. So here this kid comes to Rabbi Moshe Sternbuch and he wants to invite his parents Friday night. And here's exactly the shaila. Haben, the son wants lekarev et horav liyadut, rak shechoshesh b'mashe machshilam lechalel Shabbat. But the son understands that he invites them, even if he doesn't invite them. They're going to be home, they're going to be Machalos Shabbos, they're going to be watching television, they're going to be driving elsewhere. So his inviting them Friday night doesn't add to the Chilul Shabbos, it's just Chilul Shabbos in honor of Shabbos, if we can put it that way. His hope is that slowly but surely he can be makarev them to Yadot. And he says, I see that there is a little progress. They have come a little closer. And he, Shoel, Shema Asur Mishum Isur Lifnei Iver. And he's asking this question because he's worried that he's doing an Isa Lifnei Iver Loti Teng Mitzvah. All right, this is the question we've been dealing with for weeks already. And here he has this very question. And here's what Moshe Avrik alluded to many weeks ago when he said that Moshe Sternberg has a big chiddush on this topic. What he didn't say was, tremendous chiddush, not enough sources. People refer to it, people criticize it, people nullify it. But what Rabbi Moshe Sternbuch said is a very interesting approach. What is Lifnei Iver Lo Titen Michshol? You learn Pashat Kedoshim, we just had it. What does it mean? It means, don't mess someone up. Someone comes to me, right, Jack, was a stock, you were a stockbroker, right? Or you invested in the market and years ago, still today, but then full time. So someone comes to Jack for advice. And Jack goes out of his way to give him the wrong advice, because it's to Jack's advantage. You follow someone in the stock deal? So that's where it says, Lifnei Iver Lo Titen Michshol. Don't give someone bad advice. It's like taking a blind person. He comes to you, you're the expert, and he's going to fall in a pit. Give him proper advice. Even if in the long run, if he's going to buy that stock, it will affect the price of the stock. And since you want to buy it too, it'll up the price of the... You follow me, Jack? Am I right? Guy comes to you and says, I want to put $1 million into that stock. You tell him, no, don't do it. Why? Because you're worried stiff. If he puts in $1 million, wow, the price goes up. You want to put in $1 million. All right? Naiva looking. So, very interesting. Very interesting. Guy who doesn't know the city and he wants to go for a long walk. And he needs the shortest path. He has to go to this house. And you don't like this guy. So you say to him, yeah, walk here, walk there. You give him a walk that at the end of the walk, he's ready to drop dead from exhaustion. All right, that's with Meiva, lo tite michshol. Now let me ask a question. Lo aleinu, you're not well. You need an operation. Here's a doctor beating you up, knocking you apart, opening up your body during every prohibition in the world, wounding you. It's like my grandson tells the story when he starts medical school in the Technion. They take him and his friend, they say, we want you to see what goes on in the hospital. They already were in medical school, but this is to see the hospital in action. And they take them from place, they come into a room, they're operating on this guy, the whole body is cut open. Remember I told you, my doctor said they did it to him in Einstein, he fainted. My grandson didn't faint because he was in the army, he was in battle, he was a medic, he saw blood. Tell me, is a doctor allowed to do all this? Absolutely. But he's butchering you. He's cutting you open. But the purpose is to save you, to enhance your health, to correct the illness. Am I right or wrong? There's not a person in the world who would say to the doctor, for instance, he has to undergo chemotherapy, lo aleinu. He's nauseous. He's no energy. His hair is falling out. Idiot! They're doing all this to save your life. Right or wrong? Reb Moshe Sternbuch says, Lifnei Iver is where your intent is evil. Not good. Not kosher. You want to mislead the person. The example we gave with Jack, the stock market. But where your intention is to help the person, there's no lifnei iver. This kid is daydreaming. Mom and dad will see the light. Mom and dad will come back to the heritage of their forebears. Mom and dad will see the beauty of Shabbat. All right, now they're far from it. They'll drive home after the meal. But that is not lifnei iver. Wow. That's Reb Moshe Sternbuch. Moshe, do I have it right? That's it? He says, terrific svara. Terrific svara. Terrific svara.
So that means that a conservative rabbi is right telling people.
Yitzchak, Saflanot. Moshe Sternbuch, absolutely right. I'll quote his words. Ein bezer isu ef naiva. There's no intention here. It's Shainim Bitsavo Tumlin Soa, the underrabba. The son tells them, I'm upset, I wish you wouldn't ride, I wish you would accept Shabbat. All his kavanot ala tova. But they decide afterwards, all right, our son is a fanatic, he's gone right wing, he's a, I don't want to use that word they use in Yachnok, you understand, you've heard that word. He's gone right wing, you can't reason with him. It's their decision, not yours. You only want to help them. Very interesting point of view. Can we really view halacha in this vein? I don't know. This is taking a rational approach. You're not dealing with lifnehiva, the chisah Shabbos, the chilul Shabbos, but your intentions are totally positive. Okay, one second. Barab Moshe Sternbuch is no different than Yitzrubin. And he realizes, he says, nevertheless, there's a tremendous Chilul Hashem. Imagine in Har Nof, where you have endless Balei Tshuva, or in Beit Shemesh, or Ramat Beit Shemesh, where you have endless Balei Tshuva, a car drives up on Shabbos. What a Chilul Hashem. Everyone is talking, everyone sees. So he says, I would advise you, so al kol panim, lo yachnu et mechonotechem samuch lebeito, b'mokom sheyargishu sheba'u b'miyuchad etzlo. And says, I would advise you, have them park far away. Don't let it be obvious that they came to your house and they're going to drive home Friday night on Shabbat. I'm very apprehensive what the neighbors will say, what the gossip will say. So you seichel here, balance it out. What troubles me is exactly what Yitzchak said. If we encourage the driving, the family, where are we different than Rabbi Teddy Friedman? Temple Bethel? Maplewood, South Orange? Hold on, Moshe. 1,000 parking spots filled on Shabbos? Where are we different than the sole remaining active conservative temple, basically, in the greater Kew Gardens Hills, Hillcrest area, where about 3 different conservative temples combined, they got rid of the rabbi, I think it's called Hillcrest Jewish Center, got rid of the rabbi, was too frum, and now big parking lot open on Shabbos, the woman is the rabbi, the woman is the president, the woman is the sexton, I don't think they allow men into that temple anymore. What happens basically where you make it equal to, what's the word, egalitarian, where you make it egalitarian, it's like go to JTS today, or go to Hebrew Union College, go to Jewish Institute of Religion, the majority of the students are women. Men give a hoot about religion, men give a hoot about God, men give a hoot about spirituality. Men are bigger, they're conquering the world. It's only when they grow older that they recognize they're only mortals. Women, by nature, are much closer to God. I'm going to refer you to Rakefet's lectures of 20 years ago on this very topic, citing Rabbi Soloveitchik and a woman's physical structure, which leads her to feel life and death as a constant, ongoing reality. It's a very interesting question, and I believe the answer is very simple. There's a difference between an individual to a community. When a synagogue per se opens a parking lot, then at that moment in time, you are saying to the world, it's perfectly permissible to drive on Shabbat. When you have a question like a private family, a private occurrence, individuals, all right, yesh makom lahachmir, yesh makom lahakel. There's no black and white answer. But at least if you're lenient, do it in a way where people should understand you're not doing this b'lev v'nefesh, you're not doing it happily, you're not doing it with total acquiescence, you're doing it because it's a reality of life that the Western world, the modern world, has totally destroyed belief in God, belief in values. What's going on in Europe today, what's going on in America today, what goes on in part of the Israeli society. All right, we have to live with reality. Have I come to our Shabbos table, do it in a way that's least offensive. Yitzchak, I think that's the answer to your question, and that's what everyone struggles with. I'm not happy with being matir, inviting people Friday night who are going to drive away. I personally would never do it. On the other hand, I understand very well Chabad running a shul. I understand people individually, family, children, they don't want to break the kesher altogether. There's always the hope that a brighter dawn will take place tomorrow. So this is Reb Moshe Sternbach's tshuva. He repeats again, as long as your intentions are good, there is no lifnei iver. So this is Reb Moshe. Yes, Moshe.
So another difference, unless I don't know full details on the conservative psak, but Reb Moshe Sternbach isn't saying that it's mutter for them to drive. It's just that if they're going to drive, you should still have...
What you're trying to say is that the conservative movement says it's mutter to drive.
I'll tell you.
If you read the original responsum of the three rabbis, Friedman, Adler, and Agus, you'll see that their attitude is it's the lesser of two evils. I don't exactly think they, at that moment in time in the early 50s, were willing to say 100% it's mutter. There's a hem and haw. There's a hem and haw in it. Subsequently, halacha means nothing to the conservative. There's no difference today between the conservative movement and the reform movement. And I have news for you. There's a certain fringe that calls themselves orthodox. Halacha means absolutely nothing to them. You just saw a headline on all the websites. Orthodox rabbi declares he will perform weddings for single-sex couples, transvestites, etc., etc. You've heard that time and again. In Chovevei Torah, there are all types of rumors why Rabbi Lopatin, my Talmud, left as president. The rumors center around that very issue. So let me tell you, the Western world has cut into all our thinking, our commitment, lo aleinu. The Western world, men and women, are exactly the same, interchangeable. A Talmud said to me, to this very crooked nose, Rebbe, you got used to women studying Torah, you got to get used to women learning from the Torah in public, in the shuls. You follow? This is a very delicate question. There's no black and white answer. If we say there are five people living in a building down in Givat Mordechai in Rehov Shachal, and these five families all have children, lo aleinu, children who rebelled, this maisim b'chol yom today. Lo aleinu, didn't Rabbi Willick say there are more children becoming irreligious here than in America? Didn't Rakefet say, I doubt whether that's true, but even Rakefet admitted that there are children in America and Israel who leave the path of their parents. Right or wrong, you heard it with your own ears last week. So they want to keep the channel of communications open. Invite the kids Friday night. No, how does it look? Five beautiful cars pull up in front of the house before Shabbos and then pull away 2 hours later. It's a delicate question. There's no black... No, I feel for Rabbi Sternbuch, there's no black and white answer. But he comes in with that svara as one of the great matirim. He's totally the opposite of Moshe Feinstein and some others. Unbelievable. Eidah Haredit, Reb Moshe Sternbuch. Who are we talking about? Doesn't vote in the Israeli election. Who are we dealing with here? And take a look at that svara. All right.
I
don't know if you're saying it more modified. I would say minimize. No, what you're saying, I wouldn't use the word Marisayan, it's more self-respect. More self-respect. Now, this before we end off with the Moshe Sternbuch, first of all, I want to tell you Reb Meshulam David Soloveitchik, what I told you before, is married to his sister. That's a very interesting world. Could you imagine? Reb Meshulam David Soloveitchik is married to Rav Sternbach's sister. What I say?
He said he's married married to his sister. So
no, I meant Reb Meshulam David Soloveitchik is married to Reb Meshe Sternbach's sister. And Reb Meshulam David, I don't have to tell you, is ill now. They ask people to daven for him. He is basically the most famous. I don't know if Reb Velvel and had many children. Some were killed by Hitler. Some got to Israel. Not all of them were great Talmidei Chachamim, but of the children left today, he was the most famous Talmud Chacham, second generation from Reb Velvel, grandson of Reb Chaim. Reb Meir died earlier this year, if I'm not mistaken.
Is
Reb Meir Halevi.
Similar to the
Rav? Well, similar to the Rav on what level?
I'm talking not politics. I'm talking the level of like, great Chosei, same time,
no,
Western
no. I wouldn't say the Rebbe was a great posek. I would say the Rebbe was a great Rosh Yeshiva. But no, there's no one in this part of the family. It's two different families. You take the branch that wound up, Reb Meisher and Reb Velvel, two different worlds. But nevertheless, they remain in touch. Blood is thicker than mud. Reb Meisher Sternbuch. Here's a very interesting piece by Tuvia Preschel. Tuvia Preschel, I yet knew, I taught his children. Again, these are people, great Talmidei Chachamim. He taught for many decades at the seminary, taught Gemara, a frum Jew 1,000%. And he describes, this is an article that appeared years ago in Jewish press. Tuvia Preschel used to write for Jewish press. And he writes that Reb Meisher Sternbach was known in the yeshiva world as the Elui from London. I've known him for many years. I've met him on numerous occasions and in different places in London, Jerusalem, New York. I often recall with pleasure my bumping into him in Paris. He was walking in the street with his tefillin in his hand. Meisher, what are you doing here? I asked in surprise. He told me he had made a brief stop on his flight from London to Montreal. While he was still living in London, he occasionally traveled to Switzerland to visit relatives, to lecture at Yeshivat Eitz Chaim of Montreal, which had been founded by his uncle, the late Rabbi Elie Batschko, and to be in the company of Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg and Rabbi Mordechai Progomansky. The name Rabbi Mordechai Progomansky mean anything to you? Rabbi Mordechai Progomansky was the greatest Elui in the pre-World War II yeshiva world. A volume came out on him in Israel. It breaks the heart when you talk about him because he was raised in a fairly secular family, a Goynish Kup, went to university, somehow came into learning, came into Yiddishkeit, was in Telz, he was viewed as the most brilliant mind. He knew Kala Torah Kula, they would describe him when he traveled. He was based in Telz, but he traveled, he went into Mir, went into Slabodka, visited to see what's going on. When he would walk in, the yeshiva light went crazy with joy. They would gather around him and badger him with questions. I still met people who knew him, and he barely survived the Holocaust, barely survived. Was a broken person. Later, he wasn't married. He taught in Paris in the yeshiva they established after World War II, and then they finally made a shidduch. And no muscle, I think within the year after he married, he died. And so that's what it means. He was then in Switzerland. He went to see Reb Yaakov Weinberg, Reb Mordechai Progomansky, and Reb Meisher Sternbach is the scion of a distinguished family. His father traced his descent to the Gaon of Vilna. And Reb Meisher stresses his yichus on the title pages of his publications. He attended an English school and was for 10 years a student at the Schneider Yeshiva in London. In 1950, he came to Israel. He studied at the Yeshiva of Hebron, but spent much of his time with the great luminaries of the Torah city, especially the Briska Rav Reb Velvel, Reb Dov Beresh Wiedenfeld, the Chabina Rav. He was often a guest of the Gera Rebbe and frequently visited the Chazon Ish in Bnei Brak. And Reb Meisha, who carries a library in his head and whose wide knowledge is astonishing, has always been a matmid, but he was never a bookworm in the accepted sense of the word. He has always been alert to happenings in the Jewish world and has evinced great interest in Jewish public affairs. In recent years, he has increasingly written and spoken out on problems affecting religious Jews. He is outspoken, original, and of independent mind. You need not always agree with him, but you cannot but marvel at the way he presents his views and the force of his arguments. And this is a Mesiach Lefi Tumo. Believe me, Rav Tuvia Preschel never dreamt I would be quoting or discussing his description of Rav Moshe Sternbach so many years after this was written. But that's Rav Moshe Sternbach. This is his psak. I don't know if he realized how epic Mate's psak would be. It is going to be quoted and re-quoted, as I showed you, dafka in yeshiva university circles. People who would never follow Chumras of Rav Moshe Sternbach, who would never follow his politics, who are angry at his hashkafa, people like Rakefet, who are still choking over the fact he would stand with the Sat Muruv and maledict the state of Israel, that we need an army, and every Jewish male who's healthy has an obligation to serve in the army, and yet people like us will quote that Moshe Sternbach, and he's a very multifaceted individual. I can tell you that in the Eidah Haredit, they also have their problems with Reb Moshe Sternbach. You follow me, Dov? Not easy. They can't dismiss him, but it's a little bit hard for them to live with all his insights, his life experience. This is a person who grew up part and parcel of the Western world. Yes, Yitzchak.
Now we have to come back to the Nasik Khan.
We're not finished.
We're not finished. It's listed as Silas and Shulis of the Nasir Khan. Right. How does he accept Sternbach's answer?
When he was writing, Reb Moshe Sternbach's tshuva did not appear yet.
It
could be he knew about it later in life.
What's his opinion about the topic?
You remember when Reb Moshe Klein dealt with it. He also was Noter Lahakel. Again, we'll see. I have a world more of material. But he never quoted this concept, if you mean for his good, there's no Lifnei. It will be quoted, I'll show you, many times over in Yeshiva University circles. Give it a chance. There's more. We'll get there next week. You won't believe I'm... I picked up a pamphlet on Thursday past, and lo and behold, I couldn't believe the first topic they're dealing with is part of this very question, but we'll leave that for next Sunday. I have more I want to do. Okay, so to reiterate, what did we do today? Reb Moshe Sternbach, interesting questions, ultimately coming back to the basic question of all, and a lenient opinion that is more far-reaching than any other opinion you will find on this topic. Judge it by intentions and your feeling, your dream, your vision. I want to do good. Okay, take it further and tell him, park up the block. Don't park in front of my house. Are we happy with it? Where do we differ from a conservative temple? It's not an easy question. And we'll come back to this yet. I have a lot more material where you'll see more questions and more psakim. And each one has to deal with it in accordance with the circumstances and his own feeling in Pesach. But Reb Moshe Sternbuch, Yesh HaMilismoch, good intentions. Very, very interesting. All right, I want to mention this little pamphlet. This is Rav Tzvi Tal. Anyone know who I'm talking about?
The cat, yeah.
Okay. There was a big split in Merkaz HaRav many, many years ago. A split that has caused heartache until today. If you mention Rabbi Tal's name to Rabbi Yaakov Shapiro's people, they get very upset. I have family on both sides of the coin. My own family studied with Rabbi Yaakov Shapiro. My brother's family entirely with Rav Tzvi Tal. Rav Tzvi Tal, I believe originally they're from Holland. I know his sister, knew his sister very well. She was married to a Yeshiva College graduate, 1948 graduate, Moshe Goodman, Zichrono Levracha. She became a rabbi, although she had to give up her shteller in Austria. If you remember, she was insistent upon a proper conversion, and the kehila there that she was part of would not accept it, so she came back to Israel. Now, Rav Tzvi Tal is a tremendous modern thinker, and he has a pamphlet here that's outstanding, Ha'ometz La'atzma'ut. How do you translate that? The strength to be independent. And when I read this on Shabbat, I thought he was quoting me word by word by word. What is he dealing with here? Rav Kook, Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Kook, went along with the modern world, understood the importance of the Chalutzim, understood the irreligious Zionists and where they were coming from. And Rav Tzvi Tal, students asked him, if Rav Kook could go along with this, why are we so opposed and antagonistic to the modern world? Why can't we accept some of their ideas? And you have to see his answers. They agree, believe the nefesh. Big difference taking Chiloniyim and seeing the good in them. But the modern world today, it's a whole breakdown of human existence. 100%. Dennis Prager would love this volume. If you can, pass it on to Dennis Prager.
Hebrew.
Rav Tzvi Tal knows English, I'm sure, but everything is in Hebrew. You know where they built a tremendous yeshiva? No? Har Shmuel, it's called, right? Go to Har Shmuel. The yeshiva there is three times the size of Merkaz HaRav. Chomat Shmuel, it's called today. Har Chomat.
Rav Tal lives in Malek.
Very interesting individual. This is a little booklet that Mishpacha, Moshe, give me a second here, that Mishpacha put out a long time ago. It's on shuls, the original shuls. Very, very nicely done. Some of these shuls I know about, but here is a chaver of mine who I grew up with in Bnei Akiva. That's Rabbi Elkanah Schwartz. Kuni Schwartz. Exactly my age, exactly Yitzchak's age. And it's about the shul that he'd been rabbi of for twice 40 years. The whole neighborhood went under. They barely had a minion. Now they're regentrifying Brooklyn, and the shul is coming to life again. There are other shuls here that you'll find of interest. This is for Yitzchak. This is for Moshe. Here in one of the freebies is a beautiful article that I've read about, and it's worth it. Michael, don't run away. I have stuff for you. Well, give me a minute. Beautiful article that just happened. Some Brooklyn Jews came in, Hasidic Jews, and they went to Ma'orat HaMachpelah. And they see these soldiers on guard duty, and they see, you heard about what happened? They see this soldier with a beard and payas, and they start talking with him, and they tell him, we're Satmar Chassidim, we were told there are no frum Jews, that they're all up because him. And this guy with beard and prayers and his tzitzit sticking out takes them around and introduces them to all his friends, and they were blown away. And they went in. My daughter explained to me how this works. There's a pizza place right near Ma'orat HaMachpelah. You go in and order pizza for the soldiers. And you tell them, my daughter says she always orders for the soldiers furthest away because they probably get less pizza. And these Satmar guys ordered for all the soldiers and paid for it. And this takes me back to a debate that took place about 10 years ago between a guy named Rakefet and Rabbi Shalom Gold. It was a whole group of rabbis together in Katamon on a beautiful lawn across the street from where Prisoner of Zion Sharansky lives today, the king of the world. And Rabbi Gold was furious against Satman, maledicting them and what they did and how they ruined the minds of all the yeshiva boys in America. And Rakefet said, we cannot maledict Satmar Chassidim. They are our greatest reservoir for future good Jews. We are obligated to be makar of them to real Yiddishkeit. And boy, this story agrees with me. Now, I don't know what this is about. Michael, you'll fill me in. NBA draft lottery Knicks fans pray for Zion Williamson.
From Duke.
He's what?
He's from Duke.
From Duke.
Yeah.
And the best basketball player in the college.
And it was, he's not Jewish.
Not black.
Not Jewish. And here they describe Rabbi Adam Mintz standing at Madison Square Garden praying that the Knicks get Adam Mintz with the first pick in the draft. Did they get him?
I know I brought him in the draft.
Adam Mintz. There it is. Now, at black colleges, the baseball teams increasingly aren't black. And this is an article on why there's so few blacks in baseball today. When Jackie Robinson broke the barrier within 10 years, all the greatest baseball, Hank Aaron, one after another, Don Newcomb, one after another, Elston, Howard Elston, the Yankee catcher, the blacks were the greatest. Today, all you see are Caribbeans, South Americans, names you can't pronounce, Cubans. Where are the blacks? Very interesting article. So you're like me, you're only baseball, very bad. We're chad mashma'i, we're monolithic. This is very interesting. Trump's immigration plan emphasizes immigrant skills over family ties. In other words, if you're going to allow someone into America and he has his cousins in America, but he has no profession, or you have a medical doctor who is top quality, who do you pick? The one with the ties or the one with the ability to contribute? And this leads us back to some of the accusations made against the early Zionist leaders in the early days of the state. They were not looking to bring in the old people, but the young people. Very interesting question. I don't know if you know, this is big news in America today. Some of the states have passed very restrictive laws on abortions in the hopes that the Supreme Court will not nix it. And here's a whole article on Alabama and the new law, which is really almost in total consonance with halacha.
They're using the term post-birth abortion.
Now,
this is birth. So if the baby is 2 months old,
right,
and they're killing it.
Right, man. That's how do you do that? That you're asking now? That the battle was fought decades ago.
No, the difference between abortion and post-birth abortion. Abortion is when the baby's still in the mother's...
And post-birth?
The baby's out.
1 minute later.
She's 2 months later.
And why would they want to kill the
minutes
baby?
Minutes later. Something.
Why would they want to kill the
baby? No one likes babies anymore.
Here's an article. They've got a picture from NASA of where the Israeli spaceship landed. You can see, what a loss.
Crashed.
But they're going to try again. And this, very, very fascinating, which affects me, as the Maplewood Rebbe, they want to outlaw selling fur in New York. Could you imagine? And this is now... Fur, animals.
Right.
Fur.
It's much worse to sell animal fur than to kill human babies.
Right. And who's fighting it? Black ministers have staged protests saying that for many African Americans, wearing fur is a treasured hallmark of achievement. Who are the other people fighting it? Hasidic rabbis point to the many men who wear fur hats on the Sabbath. And an American citizen named Rakefit objects because he cannot be a Rebbe without a fur hat. I wouldn't miss tomorrow's shiur for all the fur hats in Borough Park and Flatbush and Muncie put together. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vedanya. Go ahead.
There's a fellow named Norman Podhoretz who ran a few days ago. His son wrote an article and commentary apologizing for all the terrible continuous attacks on Herman Wouk that his father and commentary in the magazine. They did not like Herman Wouk. I'll try and send you the article.
Very nice.
His son apologized.
Very nice.
Another comment. There's, at the Israel Museum, they have an exhibit on the women who cover it. Have you seen it?
No, not yet.
Okay. Exhibit isn't a lot to see, but the video that they have, 16 minutes, you have to watch it from the beginning. I'm not going to tell you anything about it. They have a nun, a Muslim woman in the middle screen, and a Jewish woman on her right.
Wow.
And I can say, something to
wait,
see.
Wait, turn it off. Turn it off.
All right. Yeah. I have a friend who's a Kohen. Rahman Aslan, he's traveling to watch a funeral for his mother. And he's standing on the road. What is that in?